you for tuning in for another episode of the Social Media Church Podcast, the place for conversations with church leaders about social media. And this is episode number 75. My name is DJ Chuang, your host. We'd love to have you join our conversation and listen to previous conversations we've had, another 74 or so previous to this one, at socialmediachurch.net. That's our website. And there you'll find our social media buttons, as well as how to subscribe, whether you're in iTunes or on Android or some other podcast catcher softwares. We'd love to have you continue our journey with us. And I'm eager to get to our conversation on this episode. And I was able to connect with Pastor Clint Schneckloth and found out that he also just released a book on church and social media. So this is three episodes in a row of new books that have been published in the past 2 weeks about church and social media. And what better place to have a conversation with those authors than here at the Social Media Church Podcast. So I'm going to switch right over, introduce you to the lead pastor of Good Shepherd Lutheran Church in Fayetteville, Arkansas. His name is Clint Schneckloth, and it is a ELCA kind of a church, which is Evangelical Lutheran Church of America denomination. He's an active blogger, talks quite a bit about the ins and out of the Lutheran Church and how their faith plays out. He pastors a good-sized church, and his book was just published a couple weeks ago. It is titled Mediating Faith, Faith Formation in a Transmedia Era. So we talk about the book, where it came from, what social media looks like in his church, and we also talk a bit about Second Life. So one of the first guests here on Social Media Church that talked about what worship and life is like in the virtual world of Second Life. Here's my conversation with Clint Schneckloth. Hey, DJ Chuang here for the Social Media Church Podcast. Today, I'm joined with Clint Schneckloth, and he's over in Arkansas. I'm here in California. He's authored a new book titled Mediating Faith, Faith Formation in a Transmedia Era. So we're going to unpack what all of that means. But first, Clint, tell us about what you do between writing books.
Well, my main gig is as the lead pastor of Good Shepherd Lutheran here in Fayetteville. And I pastor a congregation that's been in Fayetteville for about 47 years and it's the only church of our denomination in a city of now about 80,000 people. And so I am pastor to that community and also kind of represent, I guess you could say, the ELCA voice within our wider community. And we're also developing some pretty innovative things here. We called a pastor of new communities this last year who's developing a campus ministry on the University of Arkansas campus and developing a satellite of our congregation. So that's my main gig. And then on the side, I do some of the writing like you are attending to today. And I have three little kids who also take up a lot of my time. They're 8, 5, and 3.
Wonderful. And you look like a young man. So how old you are?
Oh, I'm 41.
41. Well, you look very young. You look like you're 31.
That's kind of you. Thank you.
So describe being the 40-something, there's often a stereotype that social media is only used by young people. So how did you get into social media?
Well, I was probably an early adopter. I've always been an early adopter, which still means I'm a migrant to, you know, the digital world in a way different from, say, the next generation down from me. But I convinced my parents to get an Apple II when I was in sixth grade, and I was messing around with real early versions of social media, you know, like, remember AOL dial-up? Are you old enough to remember AOL dial-up?
Oh yeah, I'm 48. So
okay, all right.
Before AOL, I was using dial-up modems with cassette tapes That's how
I actually used cassette tapes a little in elementary school too. Yeah.
Okay.
So I was already messing around with that. And so that's meant that whenever new things have come, I've typically tried to get in on them as they happen. Like especially Facebook, for example, which, you know, early on blocked you out of using it. And if you were older, because it was just for college students and then young people. But when it opened up to adults, I was early in there. So maybe my experience is slightly different than 40-somethings, although now if I get on Facebook, it's dominated by 30 and 40-somethings, right? That's one of the complaints of some younger people. It's the older person's social media. But I am there a lot, and I'm there because I think of it as a mission field.
Excellent. And so you've found a way to integrate your use of social media with ministry. As a Lutheran. So was this a part of your seminary education in some way as well?
Not really. When I was in seminary, things that were, I really feel like when I was in seminary, media was still a little more individual. So like when I was a missionary in Slovakia with my wife, I started sending out these mass emails about our mission work. And in order to communicate a message with a wider section of people, I had to just have a long email list that I maintained and then send it out that way. And I can remember when Blogger launched, and I realized I could actually write those same things and post them online, and people wouldn't have to have their inboxes filled up, but they could go to it. And that changed the texture of it. It also opened up a wider audience, which was cool for me as a person who probably also, although I'm a social media user, I'm also definitely a content like creator. I like to do broadcast media too. And so Blogger kind of taps into both of those at the same time. You can broadcast and create community. But in seminary, so I finished seminary the same year Blogger launched, and where blogging really started to take off, you know? So I think we were still mostly using telephone, just barely getting into cell phones when I was in seminary. So it was still focused on face-to-face culture almost exclusively.
All right. So that was sounds like about 10 years ago or so.
Yeah.
And you're pastoring. And tell us about the transition from seminary to pastoring, and where in the timeline did this book opportunity come up to author?
Yeah. Well, I really started to kind of hit stride with social media and ministry probably around 2008. I think that's about the time when we were a couple years into Twitter and Facebook at that point. And I started to see the ways in which you could add ambient intimacy to the face-to-face and community relationships you were having in congregation. I can remember an early experience of Facebook that was significant to me was my grandma died. And I drove over to Charles City, Iowa from Wisconsin for her funeral. And on the drive back, stopped in Decorah, Iowa, to eat lunch. That's where my alma mater is, Luther College, and ran into a couple people on the street who are my classmates from when we graduated in 95. And they walked up to me and they said, "Hey, so sorry to hear about your grandma." And I was taken aback because remember, this was really early. Like this is when you had 100 friends on Facebook or something, right? Or 80. And then I was like, how do they know about my grandma? I haven't even seen these people for like, you know, however many years. And then I realized, oh yeah, I posted something about being on this trip for the funeral. So the social network provided this kind of ambient intimacy so that when we got face to face, we could open right into something they knew I was going through when we had just happened on each other on the street. And that happens all the time in the church now. One of the things I always talk about with social media and churches, when did people ever know as much about the life of their pastor as they do now? You know, because there are people who are reading my feed know what I'm doing from day to day, sometimes even from hour to hour, and conversely, so do I. Whereas prior to the advent of social media, you mostly saw each other on Sunday morning and then maybe at choir practice on Wednesday night or whatever the one midweek thing is. And so it's kind of amazing how much it cultivates a sense of deeper community that wasn't there prior to social media.
Wow. So you got to really experience how social media became more and more a part of your life personally, as right. well as a part of your community. Now, as the pastor of your church, how large is the church, and do you have a very structured approach to how you use the various social media channels, or do you just let it flow?
We have a congregation of about 800 members. We average probably about 275 on a Sunday in worship. Some of it is just let it flow type thing. Like our Facebook group, everybody just kind of chimes in with the stuff that they want to post in there. And it's interesting. You often see the most energy around very relational things that are posted. Like somebody's daughter is in Bridge to Terabithia play, and they post, you know, hey, come to that show. And a lot of people will like it because people like to support each other just on a personal level there. But it'll also be where we do event announcements or quick volunteer subbing type things. Our most organized social media platform probably is the midweek email that we send out, which is kind of designed by our staff. And it's social in the sense that we get better metrics than you ever could with, like, say, a newsletter print. We can tell what people are clicking through to read and how they're engaging it and that kind of thing, which is really helpful for us in our office. And it's helpful for us to think about that e-blast as a form of ministry. Like, this is one of the things I'm always talking about, like in my book and in some of the study that I'm doing, is rather than seeing an e-newsletter as a tool to tell people about the ministries that are happening, in what ways can you think about an e-blast as itself ministry? You know, and then you write the content and you create content differently when you're thinking of that email as itself part of the ministry of the church.
Yeah, we have biblical precedents for that. The letters that Paul wrote
Absolutely.
In the New Testament were in a form writing as a part of ministry.
Beautiful. Right.
Great. And so when did this opportunity for a book come along in your journey?
Well, it started out as a project for my Doctor of Ministry program at Fuller Theological Seminary. And I was already kind of coalescing the idea. Then one of my final classes at Fuller was with Ryan Bolger and Doug Padgett. The Church in the Age of Facebook was the class.
Wow, there's a class for that, huh?
There is a class on the syllabus at Fuller on that topic, yeah. And so I was in that course with those guys. Bolger has thought a lot about emerging church and is attending to a lot of, like, the impact of new technology on church life. And Doug Padgett does these church media boot camps for people who, you know, feel like on the back end of, like, the late adopters who are trying to figure out just how to do basic things like websites and, you know, create an account with Twitter or whatever. So I started putting that book together. It was my final, it was my dissertation, and Fortress Press picked it up. I'm kind of pleased at how passionate they are about it. They're really putting it on the front of their promotional stuff this spring because they know that there's a real interest in and an audience for this, this topic around media and faith, I would say.
Yeah, and two other books about media and faith just launched this month as well. So,
yeah, at least. I keep warning about new ones all the time, yeah.
Yes, it is very timely. Why did you use the word transmedia rather than social media?
Well, one of the reasons I used that word, it's very intentional. I'm a big fan of a number of the books that have come out recently around church and social media. You know, Justin Wise's piece on the social church and Craig Detweiler's book, iGods, which came out this winter. And then you told me about this Rewired. I haven't read it yet, but a neighbor of mine, apparently up here in Rogers, they're all focused on social media. My book takes a bigger picture perspective. It includes chapters on social media, but I'm taking a bigger look at the impact of media writ large on faith formation. And I believe we live in what I'd call a transmedia era. So for example, notice that all these people are publishing books about digital social media. So in our era, books still matter. They're still where we, like, say, do bigger picture reflection or whatever. And then you and I are sitting here talking on Google Hangout, right, about a book, but we planned our meeting using Facebook and email. And all of this media is layering on top of each other. It's not always replacing. You know, every once in a while you'll have a medium that's actually replaced, like who uses beta tapes anymore or 8-track tapes. And I'm thankful to God that there's no longer Commodore 64s where you have to stick tapes in and like try to find the game in the middle of a tape, right? So some media, it's good that it dies out, but a lot of media layers because the new media is good, but it's good on top of, or as another, you know, thing on top of the existing media that came before. And what I'm interested in is, okay, so the church has almost always been a book culture, right?
Yeah.
Well, now we've got these layers coming on, but I don't think we're going to replace the book. I think it's still going to be there, but how we approach the book is now going to change because we have all these other resources.
Okay. So transmedia in one sense is the multi-layers of media.
Yep.
With books still being a vital part, would you say it's even central?
I think at least in the church world, it's still central.
We are people of the Bible, which is a book.
Right. Although you can, you know, my Bible's here now too. So I think it's pretty central still. Like you get gravity as a I don't think you would have asked me to be on your podcast if I wouldn't have published a book about it. Maybe I'm wrong about that, but at least.
No, I have lots of non-authors.
Oh, okay.
Yes.
Well, at least it ramps up we still give a lot of gravity to publishing, right?
Yeah, it gives me another topic to have a conversation around for sure.
Yeah, yeah. So there's still gravity around publishing and around the book. I think that's, but the example I give of transmedia that I think is the most interesting is, you remember seeing the Matrix movies? And in the Matrix, the third movie was really weird, if you remember. And at the time I watched the movies, I didn't know this, and I didn't learn it until I read Axel Bruhn's book on transmedia. But in between each one of the movies, there was actually a massively multiplayer online role-playing game, The Matrix. And the third Matrix movie is, the narrative is shaped by how that game was developed. So the only people who really understood the third movie really well were people who were also gaming. But not only that, but the third movie, the storyline itself was influenced by how players played the game between the first and the third movie. And so the product itself, the thing that developed itself, was shaped by this transmedia effect. So that's another example of transmedia, is where different kinds of media flow into each other.
All right. And then as different kinds of media are flowing into each other, how does that connect to faith formation?
If you take that example of the Matrix, you have people, and that this is an example I give in the book, people are formed in certain ways through their use of media. And so you've got like these gamers who are, their creativity and their relationship to the movie is going to be changed by having regularly played this game over time. So in the church, this is also true. So when people are engaging these media, like whatever it is, it could be like Facebook or could be any other number of media that people are engaging, as they're engaging those media, it's changing them on any number of levels. It's changing them socially and who they interact with. A lot of the study of media effects is looking at the way it's changing people's actual brains. So like the neuroscience of it, right? Like one of the complaints that some of the people who don't like these new media is that they're shortening our attention span. You know, like Nicholas Carl complained that he can't read books anymore because he's on social media too much. And so that the formation, depending on what platform you're in, is different. And that's what's intriguing to people who study media ecology, is how that plays out differently in different contexts.
All right. So a lot of it so far sounds like you're descriptive about faith formation and how our interaction with different kinds of media may affect us, our brainwave and our relationship and the way we think, the way we perceive. Do you offer some prescription of what we should do as leaders to help use technology for the intentional formation of faith?
Yeah, I do. So I have one chapter where I kind of take account of some of the warnings that people have given of how there's some dangers. And I think that's important to listen to those concerns. So as a person who tends to be positive or, you know, predisposed towards using these new media, I want to say, well, it's not all Pollyanna, it's not all perfect, and we should probably listen to some of the concerns that people are raising. But my main prescription would be for people who are kind of operating out of fear of some of the new stuff is just try it. You know, like one of the struggles I've had is I describe to people all the time about praying in Second Life, because I have a community that I pray with there. And I can rarely convince people to even just create an avatar and check out Second Life. Like, it seems like it's such a barrier to them for some reason. I'm not sure what all those barriers are. So part of it is just like, give it a try. But then in the final part of the book, my prescriptions that I offer are around, I use three terms to kind of frame how we can think about positive impacts of media effects and how to analyze really any medium. And that is beauty, sociality, and eschatology. And really short form of that is there are ways in which our life together in mediated contexts can be more or less beautiful. And probably all of us can identify ways in which certain media that we engage really enhances the beauty of our lives and draws us up towards God, and therefore also in greater service to our neighbor. That social media especially has opened up the ways in which we can be social together. So it reinforces how we are because we are together. And then the eschatological point, especially when we're thinking about digital media, it's often getting us to think about the future. And a lot of social media prognosticators often like to talk about the future based on like the current present stuff that they really love about digital media. You know, they're all like waiting for almost like a digital rapture or something like that. But from a theological perspective, we believe that God is coming to us in the Spirit and in Christ. And so what does it mean to rest into the media that we have, anticipating God's coming, rather than thinking everything's going to be assured based on our just developing technologies in a greater and greater fashion? The singularity type stuff that is around.
Good thoughts. And you're one of the first guests on the Social Media Church podcast to mention using Second Life actively. So what kind of relationships and what kind of people are there? I mean, everybody's in an avatar, but is it more of a fantasy role play, or are people just as real as they want to be, like on Facebook or Twitter? Give us a 30-second synopsis of where Second Life fits into the whole ecosystem of what's happening.
Yeah. So Second Life is unique in that it's not quite a game, or it doesn't have to be in the way that, say, World of Warcraft is. So some people go on Second Life and they create, because you can design stuff in there. So you can build your own like realm. You have basically like a property that you can purchase from the developers of Second Life, and then you can build your world within there. And so some people build role-playing games within their area, and then other people just build spaces. They're, you know, it's just like kind of like a playground or a sandbox. And there are churches in Second Life. The biggest one probably is the Anglican Cathedral, which has a full-time priest from the Anglican Church who serves there and staffs it. And so you can go around on the grounds and you can go to church, and there's little chapels and stuff around. I've primarily worshiped with a community on Second Life. It's called St. Matthew's by the Sea. And it's an LGBT-friendly community. It's actually named after Matthew Shepard, who was a young man who was killed for being gay up in, Wyoming, I think, about a decade ago. Most of the people who come there are praying the daily office. So like I go there and pray Compline, and you just gather in a little worship space. There's a thing you can push in the middle of the worship space that gives you the bulletin, and you've got the bulletin up on the screen with you, and then they lead you through. There's a worship leader who leads you through Compline. And it's very, it's like going to Compline in real life. You know, they follow that order, and there's music, and then afterwards you sit around and chat with the people who came for worship.
Wow. So, I mean, everything's virtual in that Second Life space, and yes, yet it's real time. I mean, there's no recording kind of things. I mean, it's real time. So you are geosynchronous, or not geosynchronous, you are synchronous with other people who are believers, or at least are people that want to spend some time in worship with God. And so there's a spiritual experience in a virtual world.
Yes. And the people are from all over. And it's very multi-sensory. You can come to the worship and you can do the audio, or you can do it all in text. A lot of people who use Second Life maybe are impaired in some way. So a lot of users of Second Life might be, maybe they're deaf, and then they would just exclusively use the texting function. So it lets them worship by typing. There's some appeal about Second Life in that way, that it, because it is a Second Life, like let's say you have Tourette's and you feel you would be disruptive of a real body worship experience, but you can go into Second Life and your Tourette's doesn't manifest itself in that context. And so you can worship without feeling like you're disrupting people. Of course, there's all kinds of stuff in Second Life. It's not just worship. People build whatever kind of world they want to build, like in real life.
Yeah, except they have no constraints. I mean, their imaginations can go so many more directions without the physical constraints of...
Oh, yeah, you can build like a space station or...
Yeah, like, there you go. Well, I do have a Second Life account. You've encouraged me to revisit the virtual world there, so thank you. Well, let me close with this. I know authors often have a lot more to say than just what goes into a book. If you were to have an opportunity to write a sequel or another book about a related topic, what would you like to explore more?
Well, I'm already exploring the idea of writing a follow-up volume to this one that's geared directly towards youth directors and parents. Because I think that already there's new emerging ways of using social media that a lot of us are trying to get our heads around, like the micro communities that so many teenagers are a part of now because they're all using like Snapchat or texting. So what how they're communicating together isn't like Facebook, where it's in front of a really big group of people. It'll just be the little subgroup that they all add to their Snapchat. And I wonder what that's going to do kind of long-term. And I know a lot of parents and a lot of youth directors probably are trying to figure out like how to communicate with the youth group when there's not one mass platform to communicate with them anymore. Parents are, you know, probably have a lot of questions around it. And so I think that's definitely a possible next direction.
All right, Clint. Thank you so much for joining me on Social Media Church Podcast. I'll certainly add a link in the show notes to your interview with Meredith Gould over at the Chesakum blog, as well as a link to your book. Sounds like a useful resource to help us understand just how our humanity interacts with the technology of various layers of social media.
Great.
There you go.
Well, thanks for your time.
Great connecting with you. Blessings.
Blessings to you too. All right.
Thank you again, Clint Schneckloth, for joining me here on the Social Media Church podcast. Really appreciate his quick turnaround. I just pinged him on Facebook, and then we connected on Google Plus Hangout on Air. And in the show notes, if you want to watch the raw conversation, that's available for you. And in the show notes, of course, I'll link to the new book by Clint Schneckloth. The title, again, is Mediating Faith, Faith Formation in a Transmedia Era. And all of those things, as well as a link to his blog post, how to connect with him through his blog and social media, and a couple of things that I found, including an interview that Meredith Gould did on the Chesachem blog. Chesachem standing for Church Social Media, and she was a previous guest here on Social Media Church as well. So a lot of goodies, a lot of good thoughts and perspective about faith formation and how social media makes a difference. Again, all of those things are at our website, socialmediachurch.net. And if you'd like to just call in, that's a quick way to join the conversation wherever you are. And it's amazing, isn't it, that technology has evolved to the point where now Verizon, the most reliable network here in the United States, is now offering unlimited text and unlimited talk for their telephone plans. And so you can call in and leave a voicemail message with your thoughts, your questions, your comments, or a story of how social media has made a difference in your life or someone else's, or a question about social media, and we'll roll it right into a future episode. And to do that, just call in to the number, here you go, 949-354-3216. That number again, 949-354-3216. Would love to hear from you, and as well as all the other listeners that are here. Well, as I'm eager to get this episode uploaded so that you can listen to it, and I know Clint is eager to get a link to share this episode and this conversation with all of his connections, and you do the same. Share and rate and review this podcast if you would. If you happen to be on iTunes, you can do that. If not, do it on Facebook or Twitter or on our blog. Again, the address is socialmediachurch.net. And I'll wrap up here, get it post-produced, edited, and uploaded. My name is DJ Chuang, and until next time, we'll stay connected online.